You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Rose Sprinkle. Isn't that a fun name? Not the topic, but I think it's super fun. Rose and I talk about a tough thing, actually. Rose shares a story of how a time when she lost a friend and how the trauma of that experience had a profound impact on her life. The word trauma has gotten a lot of use in the past decade or so. This is a very good thing, in my opinion. What's interesting to me is just a person who's bumbling her way through life is that even though this is a word and a topic that we were talking a lot about it recently, there are books, there are doctors, there are all the things, what it doesn't mean that it's obvious when trauma or PTSD shows up in our own lives or the lives of the people around us. So Rose shares with us what happened and what kind of support she had. She shares how she realized that the event had been traumatic for her. She also shares what the treatment and recovery was like for her and how this experience affected her path forward, which is super interesting. Stories change over time, which is probably where that saying about time heals all wounds comes from, just a guess. One of the things that's nice about this story and how Rose shares with us is while we talk about a really tough time in her life, it's a very pleasant conversation. So, are you ready? Let's do it. Rose Sprinkle, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I'm so ready, Amy. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you are welcome. I start all of my conversations asking my guests what part of the world they call home. Share with us where you are today.
I'm currently in Washington State on the West Coast.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Next question, warm-up question, getting to know you a little better before we dive into the topic of the day. What is your favorite way to transition from busy time, like being really busy, to downtime?
I need to clean and have a clean space. So
cleaning.
Yes.
I love it. That is the first time someone has given cleaning as the answer. I think that is spectacular. What a great answer. All right. Topic of the day. We are going to talk about a time when you lost a friend. And the backstory here is that it was a traumatic way to lose somebody. And we're going to talk about how you worked through that experience and how it impacted the path of your life. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So let's jump right into this. I don't like to, especially when talking about topics that could be like extra dramatic and extra juicy, because I'm not big on the whole leave everybody hanging. How old were you and your friend when this happened?
So I was about 26 when this happened.
Okay.
Yes. And I was living in Utah at the time.
All right.
So not here in my home state. So I was recently graduated from college. I had been just living down there and working as a single adult. And she was a really just amazing person. Anyone that met her just lit up and felt really welcome around her. And we just instantly clicked. So I would find myself regularly spending the night over there, you know, randomly throughout the week, or just crash on her couch. And it was just kind of, you know, a day like any other. I stopped by really late, and we were waking to go up to church together the next day. And then, that's kind of where it all started.
All right. So very good. So now I'm going to do something. I'm going to totally break a rule in interviewing. Like, so when you're interviewing and you're asking people questions, you're always supposed to know the answer pretty much before you ask. And I do not actually know the answer to this. I'm not following the instructions. But so here goes. With respect to the fact that part of this is not actually your story, I'm going to ask you a question that involves somebody else. So do you want to share with us what happened so that we can understand the experience that you went through? So from your point of view, so without trying to tell you, not asking you to tell your friend's story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically what happened was I found her deceased and tried to revive her, couldn't revive her. And it was very unexpected. In fact, when they did her autopsy, there was no report on why she had passed. They couldn't come up with any conclusive answer. So it was very unexpected. It was very sudden. But the oddest thing that I found was that there were a lot of feelings that I kept having before the event happened. almost signs or themes or thoughts that I had. So one impression that I had the night before she passed was to give her a hug and tell her that I loved her. It was very specific. And I remember just kind of being like, well, that's a really weird thought to have, right? Because I tell her all the time. I mean, it just felt kind of peculiar to me. So I did. I told her I loved her and gave her a really big hug. And that was kind of the last like interaction we had. So I'm very grateful
That is
that
lucky. That is
that
lucky.
happened.
So you guys were very close friends, but you didn't meet until you were adults.
Right. We didn't meet
And
till we were adults.
you had a lot of interactions. So you're going through your days. You have a very close friendship and a lot of interaction. You say you spent lots of time over there, and then she passes away, and you're the person that finds her. That is a really tough, tough thing for anybody to go through. So at the time that this happened, did you have any idea what trauma was? Was this something that you were familiar with, or even any sort of vocabulary?
No, not at all. And it was something I actually ended up moving back to Washington State about 2 weeks later. That was already planned before this happened. I was moving home to pursue a relationship, and I just felt like it was time to go back to my family. And so it was like just a whirlwind of change all at once. And it was taking me out of one support group and then throwing me back into another place that was home for a long time, but it didn't feel like home once I got back. So
Okay.
not only had I just had this traumatic experience, but I didn't really have the support system around me when I needed it to grieve properly or the knowledge of what I was going through. It took me a really long time to understand trauma and, PTSD, because
Yeah.
before that, I'll just go to counseling and like all the tricks that I know, I'll eat well, I'll exercise, I'll do all the things. And I did. And none of it was addressing the symptoms that I was having, which were all new to me, like night terrors, where I'd get up in the middle of the night and like walk around and, things like that, or wake up screaming, just, bizarre things that I'd never experienced before. So it took me about 2 years of struggling to finally figure out that I had PTSD. I just thought that was reserved for people
Yeah.
who, had been in war or something like that, because I just thought, yeah, I just lost a friend, like that's not right.
Right.
So once I was able to address that, then I started to see some real change in how my body was responding to things in everyday life. But it was a long journey. It was probably a lot more stressful than it needed to be if I had had the resources and had known the
All
proper
right. Well, yeah, no, if we knew, but listen. How can anybody know until you know? There's no way to know what you don't know. All right, so how long had you been in Utah?
I had been there for about 2.5, 3 years.
Okay, so the reason I asked that question is that I want to talk a little bit about support. And the reason I ask about support is not to throw the people who are around you at either of these things under the bus, because that's not the thing. But it is to tell a story in such a way that people who are going through whatever they're going through in their life, they can look around at their own situation and be like, oh, okay. So you had lived there for 2.5 years. You had a solid friend group, and did you feel like you had a lot of support in Utah?
Yeah, we had a lot of friends, a lot of really good friends that I still am in contact with, that I follow all the time. And I don't think it wasn't that they wouldn't have been there. I just think it was the fact that I felt so isolated because then I was leaving, right? So
Yes.
they were able to grieve together.
Because
And
they knew what you would have experienced, and did they also know your friends, some of them?
yeah, and they were also
Yeah.
close to her. So it felt like I was just kind of removed.
Yeah.
And I didn't get that closure of like really grieving with everyone and like pre and post what that looked like. It was like, here I am trying to just venture out into creating my life, and I'm just being ripped from like, the people that I would have been able to probably lean on more. And then just trying to assimilate back into, normal everyday life, like working and providing for myself. And it just felt like two different lives,
Yeah. And so then you move back to a place that is an earlier version of home. And you have support there too, but they didn't share the experience you had. And so were they trying to be supportive? I would guess that they were, but I'll just let you talk about it. And how did it not, it just didn't hit the same way, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think that it's one of those things where, like, regardless if someone had been amazing at being supportive, there's so much shame involved with trauma, and there's so much like just you feel like you don't even want to talk about it because you don't want to trivialize the experience because it feels so heavy. It's taking such a toll on you physically, right? That the thing that you want to do is you naturally want to withdraw, even if someone's like offering support. I think there's a level of like, I can't trust you with this, so I need to just hold it here. And I think that's what I was experiencing a lot of. Just like, I don't want to talk about it. I could try to explain it to you, but like, I'm still reliving it every day, right?
Well, the reliving is the thing that is so interesting because that's one of the unique things about the traumatic stress response, right? So the when we say PTSD, like so the post is it's after the thing has already happened, right? And then the stress response is that we keep reliving it, like when it happens to us. And it's a crazy thing because you don't realize that you're doing it in most cases. I don't know if you realized you were doing it. Like, did you feel like you were functioning and going through your day?
Yeah, it was. There were like moments where I thought, okay, here we go, right? Where I would have like a true flashback where my body would start to relive the panic.
Okay.
And if I got triggered in a certain way, and that was almost kind of embarrassing for me because I couldn't really stop it. And I was like trying to really hard, like, okay, I'm gonna breathe. I'm gonna like explain to my friends what were happening. But I remember everyone looked at me kind of just like, right, this is weird. Why is this happening? And I'm just like, I don't know, right?
Yeah.
So I felt kind of judged in some ways, like, I can't control my emotions, but that's exactly what PTSD is. Like, you really can't control your body's overriding everything because that's exactly the definition of trauma. Like, our body designed to cope with it. And so it was a really delicate thing to deal with.
Sounds like it definitely does. So now this sounds to me like you had done some training or some counseling or some therapy before, and you had some pretty strong coping mechanisms that you were leaning into. I'm gonna eat real food. I'm gonna get outside. Like, so what, so is, am I reading that right? You had some things that you were trying to do.
Yeah, I was definitely seeing like a bereavement counselor and talking about grief. And, but it still wasn't really, I felt like I was doing okay. Like I was like still being able to function, right? I wasn't like completely immovable and just completely pulled away, not functioning, but it was just kind of always lingering, you know? And so it wasn't until I really learned how the brain worked and the body, you know, in conjunction with that. But then I really started to understand. But you know, a lot of the times we make a judgment call on somebody, you know, but really it's they're dealing with this thing internally.
Oh, yeah. No, that's one of the hardest things about being a human being is like we're all walking around with our own stuff going on. You just have absolutely no idea what the other people are going through. And so, you know, like, and
Yeah.
that's magnify it times every single person you see every single day. So, you know, the person you honk at in the, you know, in the traffic line, you know, maybe they're, you know, who knows what's going on. Like, I mean, we really have no idea. It could be anything, right? So, all right. So, yeah.
I'll say, and then you kind of add on the layer of like self-judgment, right? Because
Yeah.
always someone who's loved personal development and growth. And in my mind, like you just keep getting better and better and better, right? There's no room to fluctuate down. So when this was happening, I was just getting more and more frustrated. Like, you know,
So let me
I.
ask you a follow-up question on that. Would you say that that is because you weren't giving yourself permission to not know what to do?
I think so.
Yeah,
Yeah.
like I should know how to fix this. I should know how to move on.
Yeah, especially if you've like spent a lot of time in counseling, you're like, yeah, I understand this, right? Like I should be able to fix this, or I should be able
Yeah.
to be competent enough or independent enough. And so, you know, it was kind of like I was bringing a hose to a fire, but what I really needed was the whole fire department.
Joe, that's a really, really good metaphor. All right, very good. So you knew you're working with a bereavement counselor. When and how do you realize? Do you realize on your own that it's trauma, or does somebody tell you, hey, what you have experienced is traumatic?
So I remember I had a really good friend. She called me and she's like, you know, have you ever heard of EMDR therapy? So
Okay.
her dad was a psychiatrist. And I was like, no, I've never heard of this. And it sounds like voodoo and feng shui.
I was going to say, all right, so listen, yeah, it does. It absolutely does. All right, so I'll go on, keep going. I'll come back to that.
So she kind of mentioned it to me, and she had mentioned it to me a few times, but I don't think I was ready to like, I don't think I was humble enough to really take in like what she
Yeah.
was saying. I just thought like, no, I'll just keep trying it my way. Well, my way was wrong and it sucked and I should have just listened to her. So, there's something for that. But I kind of read the book from John Van Epp, The Body Keeps the Score.
Okay, yep.
And this book is like a beast. I don't know if you've ever read it or heard of it. Yeah. And once I read that and it talked about EMDR therapy, I was like, okay, it's time. It's time. And I think within like 2 or 3 months, I was starting to finally feel normal. I mean, obviously,
Okay.
but back to where I wasn't experiencing the symptoms anymore.
So let's back up a teeny tiny bit because I just want to give you a chance to tell this story because I have I've known about EMDR for decades now, but and some of the people listening may know what EMDR is. But tell us a little bit about what it is. And actually, let's start this. So tell everybody what it is, and then share the first time you heard about it. You said you're like, this sounds like voodoo. Like, share what your reaction was, because I think that's reasonable. The first time somebody tells you about this, you're like, really? Are we for real with this?
Yeah, it seems very like I was very skeptical. So I can't remember what the last two letters stand for. I know it's like eye movement or something.
Desensitization is the D.
Yeah. So
So,
what I loved about EMDR was it's like the least invasive therapy I've ever had. I didn't really
yeah.
have to talk much about what had happened. like kind of briefly. But essentially my experience was I had these two sensory like rocks in my hand essentially that would like buzz. I would watch a light stick move back and forth. So your eyes are moving rapidly from left to right. And I guess that movement helps process what's going on in your prefrontal cortex, which is what's constantly triggering the trauma, and it moves it to the back of your brain so that it's part of your subconscious and it's no longer creating that physical reaction.
It helps you lessen the physical response. But the first time somebody tells you, so listen, we're going to have you move your eyes and
Right.
think about the situation
Right.
and hold on to these little vibrating paddles, and that's going to make you feel better. When somebody tells you that, you're like, I'm sorry, what?
Right. I know. I was like, this doesn't make any sense. So in a way, you can just, all right, I'm going to try it. I've tried everything else, so I got nothing to lose. And yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I would recommend it to everybody.
All right, so you were skeptical, but you jump in and you try it. And it's not a pill, it's not a one-stop shop type thing. So you're working with somebody on this and you say it's 2 to 3 months and you begin to notice that your responses are lessened, I guess.
Yeah, I would kind of like anticipate the, extreme response, and then it never came, and I just felt completely calm. I was like, wow, I just cannot believe, Yeah, it was a huge relief.
So, as a part of this, like, did you already know what the things were that were setting you off? We call them triggers, but that word is definitely overused in storytelling these days. Were you already aware of the situations that were causing you to have reactions, or did you discover that when you were working with people on the desensitization?
So it was, I already kind of knew the triggers. There was another thing that had happened. Like I had an engagement that fell through and during that time, and that kind of re-triggered all of my abandonment issues that I developed during the loss of my friend. Just huge, huge abandonment fear after that. And that's when I started noticing the symptoms coming on even harder. So anytime I saw that person or anytime I heard anything, it was like immediately back into triggered mode. So it was difficult to manage that because we were in a situation where we had to see each other pretty often.
Wow, that must have been hard to do
Was
that,
really
yes.
hard. Yeah. And it was hard to even explain to people what I was feeling when I couldn't even determine what I was feeling, right? Just completely overwhelmed.
Yeah. So I guess that's the thing, it's not just like a wave of emotion. that you were experiencing, it like shuts down your body. And people can sometimes push through it, and depending on what it is, and not everybody's the same, so I don't want to make it sound like I know what I'm talking about. But all right, so would you say that this experience of, I mean, coming in to discover and having to identify a close friend who is deceased, that's a very, very emotional experience. But would you say that this experience and the therapy that followed it was pivotal in your life?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, that's the hard thing about life, right? Because it's like we don't want to go through these things. No one wants to go through hard times, right? If we had our choice, life would always be perfect. It would always be wonderful. But it's really those painful things that I think that are the catalysts for like our greatest growth. And without them, life wouldn't be good. We wouldn't be able to have the joy. We wouldn't be able to know what joy feels like, because we'd have nothing to contrast it to, and we wouldn't be able to appreciate it. So I think when you're in it, it's always going to be frustrating. But I think every time you get out of it, you can look back and say, okay, wow, I've grown so much, or I've learned so much, or, maybe I went through this to help somebody else. And so if you can put meaning to your pain and suffering, I think it just makes it. It makes it worthwhile, it makes it it's something that you treasure.
I want to shift the conversation a teeny tiny bit and talk about you when you were a youngster. So when you were a kid, what were your thoughts about what you wanted to be when you were growing up?
Oh man, that's a hard question.
I can give you an age range, like so, like choose like a teen, like middle school, high school, not like 5 or 6.
So I always thought I was going to be a teacher. And I love teaching, but I think I went about it in a different route. At first, I was an elementary education major, and then I decided I didn't want to teach in that, formality in front of a classroom. But ultimately, I love learning and learning from people and teaching.
So very good. So today you are a parenting expert and you write children's books to help children learn emotional regulation. So would you say that that work and choosing to do that work stems directly from your experience in recovering from this traumatic moment, or was it something else entirely?
It's kind of been an organic journey. I didn't start out like, oh, I'm going to write books and I'm going to do this as a strategy or anything like that. It was more that I wrote my first book, Little Love, about self-worth, because my self-worth was completely destroyed after these couple of experiences, and I kind of had to rebuild it. And so part of me writing these books was just a means for me to heal and kind of just have an outlet to express myself. And so I kind of combined my background of teaching, and then I actually ended up going into graphic design as my career. That's what I did, was I was a visual designer and a marketing, branding, identity kind of artist and things like that. So it's kind of a marriage of both of those skill sets. But I just kept writing. I just felt like there was more to say. And so those eventually turned into The Little Virtues, the books that I have now, to help kids, learn some of these regulation tools so that hopefully when things happen, they have some skills to be able to fall back on and to really believe in themselves. So.
So those are beautiful words. Let's talk a little bit about more what they mean, because there's a lot here, and it's a short interview, but let's talk a little bit more about it to give people a sense of how these things tie together. Because I think that we do want to believe that life is like a movie and hard things happen and we bounce back right away. But you talk about the fact that you knew you had some struggles with abandonment, which is a very complex issue, but then you were aware of those as an adult. Then you experience this of a friend suddenly leaving you through death, and that compounds with a broken relationship, which results to what we're going to call, I don't know, acute or I'm not the doctor, acute or complex trauma that you seek treatment for. And the treatment is successful. You're very happy about it. But how does that become your self-worth is not where it needs to be?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think one of the things I was learning about myself, or maybe relearning, is I was like, oh, I'm a very codependent person. I not understanding like where someone ends and I begin. It was just like, oh, okay, I have these codependent tendencies. And so like, how do I grow out of that, mature, differentiate and become stronger. And because I always thought I was a very independent person, well, I found out that that's, not the reality. So how
That's
I grew
like
up.
when I tell people, I'm like, I thought I was delightful as a teenager. And then I had teenagers like me as children. And I was like, you know what? I'd like to call everybody in my life and apologize.
Right. Like, oh, okay, I'm sorry it's taken me, 30+ years to kind of be more self-aware here. But I think part of it is you're just kind of constantly, gaining knowledge and wisdom. And unfortunately, it's usually painful because you're being challenged the whole time. So I totally lost my train of thought. How's your
So you're realizing you're going through this and you're working on the healing, and you realize that you are not as independent as you thought. You're codependent or enmeshed with the other people in your life. And how did you come to that awareness?
I think a lot, probably after my engagement dissolved, and even in the first couple of years of my marriage, just learning, these
Okay.
take a lifetime to grow and learn from, right? Like
Yeah.
you spend your whole childhood learning these patterns, and like then you have to break them. And it's a lot harder to do that than we really talk about, but it's like just being able to constantly work at it. Like I don't think people easily change their attachment styles, right? Like
No.
you're always going to be working on just, monitoring that attachment style, right? So
Yeah.
we
Yeah.
have to give ourselves a lot of self-compassion, a lot, probably a lot more than we're willing to do, I think. So that's been a really good lesson for me to learn.
Very, very nice. Yeah, we do. We have this concept that being a child is what prepares us for being an adult. And that the things we learned last week are the things we're going to need this week. And it turns out in my life, every week comes with a new set of things. It's like, didn't we already do this? Like, why do we need to do this again? But oh no, here they are
Right.
again.
Like, how slow are we at learning? Like, we're pretty slow,
All right. So how does it, so you have a background in teaching, you're working with therapists, you're very self-aware, you're working on yourself. What is the actual moment that the book starts? Like, are you journaling for yourself? At what point do you say, oh, this might be a book? And how does it become a, where does the idea that it would be for children start?
Okay, great questions, Amy. I love your questions. So basically, the first book started. This is actually kind of a crazy experience. I was sleeping and I woke up crying. So I had
Okay.
been dreaming about something. I don't know what it was. And this was before I started EMDR. And like I had been doing everything and I just felt like nothing was working, right? So I felt pretty hopeless at this point. And so I woke up. I remember it very poignantly. It was like 3 in the morning. And I was just kind of quietly crying. And I just had this thought, like, if I had to explain to someone how I feel right now, what would I say? And I literally just said, I would tell them that I have a hole in my heart and I just can't fill it no matter what I'm doing. Like, no matter how hard I'm trying, I just can't seem to fix it. And that was like the beginning of the book, like that
Okay.
line. And so I always keep a pen and paper by my bed at night. So if ever I get thoughts or ideas, I can just jot them down. And so I started writing and I didn't stop. I wrote the story to Little Love in like 30 minutes and it just came line after line after line after line. And when I submitted it to the publishers, we ended up changing like two words, I think, from the original manuscript just to make it rhyme better or something, or even grammatically fix it. And that was it. There was like no changes to the original writing. And it just, I think it was a story that needed to come out of me. Like I had been holding it in for so long. It just felt like I just need to express this. I have always wanted to write a children's book. Like
Okay. So
this
that
is
was a
a
set
time.
idea. That was an idea and a
Yeah.
thought you had. Okay.
It was an idea I thought that I had in high school. And I've always wanted to write a children's book just because I love that you can take something so complicated and yet so simple for a child to understand and do it in a creative way. So the book itself has nothing to do with grief. It has like you wouldn't know what I had been through. They
Yeah.
don't talk about heavy adult material or things like that, but it just talks to you about this girl who is trying to figure out why she's sad and she learns in the end that like you can't rely on external things to make you happy. You can't rely on money. You can't rely on popularity. Like she meets a version of herself that's whole, and that's how she starts to understand how to heal herself. Like, oh, I have all this inside me already. I just need to give instead of worrying about myself all the time. So,
All right, so I'm going to ask about a piece of that. That's a very cool story, but I'm going to ask about a piece of it in case it's helpful to anybody listening. So you said that you keep a notepad and a pen by your bed in case you had any ideas. I'm curious whether or not that was your idea on your own, or whether it is because you were experiencing insomnia, anxiety, stress during the night, and somebody was like, "This is a thing you can do."
I'd actually heard it from somebody, and I can't remember
Okay.
who it was, but I thought, what a great idea, right?
Okay.
Because, I mean, what good is an idea if it's just an idea and it just
Yeah.
stays dead, right?
And people do it in a bunch of different ways. Like some people believe in the dream journaling, like wake yourself up on purpose and do like and see if you can trigger like the ideas to come. But then also like if you are there's probably nobody listening who hasn't had that. If you're having trouble sleeping because things are running through your mind, it's one of the both therapists will give this and also friends or like write down everything that you're thinking of so that then you can relax and shut down and go to sleep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's definitely, it's like the trick of it's like five things you're grateful for and everything on your to-do list. And then you're hopefully your brain will shut off and not wake you up at 2:30 in the morning to ask you if you bought the things for the, bake sale the next day. So I was curious about that when you said that. So you go through this and you would like essentially, sometimes people will call this a download, like you just write the book. It comes through all of these things. You'd always wanted to write a children's book, and this is that you working with a publisher. Did you have a publisher? Did you know how to publish books? Was this something you were already aware of doing, or were you starting ground zero and had to figure it out?
I had no idea how to publish a book. So I just remember Googling, like, how do I publish a book? And now with ChatGPT, I'm sure it's way easier to figure that out. But I basically just like was at a point in my life where I was pursuing any and every creative idea, no matter how big or how small. I was just at a point where I was like, I got nothing to lose and I'm gonna just play. That was my goal. So I just shot it out to a bunch of different publishers. And it was a publisher in Oregon that reached back to me. They had normally done textbooks, but they were like, you don't really normally do children's books, but we love this so much that we want to partner together with you. And so it was very flattering. I was like, okay, let's go. And they were great and have been great. So that's kind of how it got started. But
That's
yeah,
amazing.
I had no idea.
All right, very good. So you have a varied history and it all comes together. In a second, we are going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people about what you do, like and about this series of books and all the things you do to help people and where you want them to find you after they listen to the interview.
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, we have eight books that are published, and each book talks through a different virtue. So there's like little love, little honest, little brave. So it's really inclusive because these are timeless traits that all of us want, right? The things that are like constantly praised, they're different than values, which was kind of an interesting thing because I was writing these books, I was like, what is it that I'm writing about? And so I had to kind of research what virtues were. And it was like, wow, this is so insightful and mind-blowing. But essentially, like, values are things that are subjective and can change over time based on culture, what they love. But virtues are like, from the beginning of time, these are the traits we want to be. Cooperative, they're not just based on religion. Like, they're for everybody. And I was like, that's exactly what I want to speak to, is the experience of what it's like to be human and flawed. That is essentially what the books are about. So in each book, there's a character that doesn't have the virtue in the beginning. And then through the guidance of like a loving mentor, they learn what they're missing and how to apply it properly. So my favorite example is Little Brave. He thinks he's brave because he's been undefeated in the beginning of the book. And then by the end, he realizes that having true courage is when you're actually scared and you do it anyways. So that perfectionistic thinking, which I think we all naturally lean towards with our reptilian brains versus what the actual truth is in real life. And
Thanks.
that takes some layers to dig through, I think, to find.
Right. No, well, it is. It's a nuanced thing because it's like, if you, they feel like they're moving targets sometimes. So it's like if you try to define honesty in a room of like 20 or 30 people, you might go around like circularly till, not everybody will agree necessarily on what it looks like in every situation. And so that is definitely that. So how many, okay, so Little Virtues is a series. How many virtues, like what, how many virtues are there?
There are so many. There's like
Okay.
60, 30 to 60 virtues. There
Okay,
are.
so you have a lot to work through. This is
Oh,
a project you keep going.
yeah,
Okay.
I keep going. Like, that you want to think confidence.
Okay.
Confidence is a virtue, it's a skill that you learn, it's a good thing. So, what we've been working on recently to kind of bring it all together is a curriculum that parents can go along with their children to learn these virtues and different activities that they can do together that are really
Yeah.
creative and fun. Like we have arts and crafts, we have songs, the stories themselves to really kind of show how these show up in real life applications. You know, how can a child learn to be honest? What can they do? How can they learn to develop a love for serving other people?
Yeah.
Or can they be brave on the first day of school? You know what I mean? So it's very applicable and it's really fun. It's been something that I've been super excited to release.
So that is super interesting. All right, so you've been working on this, you've been doing all of these things. There's many, many more you can write. So that's very fun. You have a special offer for the listeners. The Little Virtues Character Development Guide for Kids, 236 page parent-led guide for social emotional learning. Normally people can buy this for $97, but there's a link in the show notes so you can get it for the discount of $37. And the link is already set up. You don't need an additional code. That link for everybody who's listening and watching is in the notes underneath this episode. But as always, the easiest way to get these links is to be subscribed to the Imperfect Adulting community, because then it comes straight into your email box and you can click it and you get all of the offers from every single episode. So that is really easy. So I have an extra question before we get to the final three questions that came into my little mind here, which is I want to ask you, if you think back to when you were a child reading books or having books read to you, what were some of your favorite storybooks when you were a kid? Do you remember?
Wow, that's a great question. So, my dad worked a lot. So him reading to me was like the only time that I really had with him when I was really young. And those were like precious moments to me. So like as an adult, that is the time that I think of for nostalgic growing up with him. And he would actually read me, and these books are now like really controversial, but he would read me the Rare Bear, Brer Fox, Brer
Oh,
Rabbit
yeah. Okay, yeah.
books. I absolutely love those stories. And then we'd also read like all the classic, like The Little Prince.
Yep.
That was a book that we loved. And he would also make up a lot of stories, actually, too.
Okay.
So it was kind of just, I think that there is so much bonding in reading together between a parent and a child. And if there's like anything you can do throughout the day to connect with your kids, it's to read to them.
Yeah, no, I mean, reading to kids, the thing that is fun about reading to kids is that the bonding and the closeness and the things like that. The thing that is less fun sometimes about reading to the kids in our life is that they, and this is good for people who write and sell books, my kids always wanted to read the same book 5,227 times. And so you do get to the point where you're like, okay.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that. Like,
Yeah.
kids want that repetition because that's how they learn, and that's also how they feel safe.
Yeah.
So, like, I know it drives me crazy too. We watch Moana too, like literally every day,
Yeah.
and like, okay, this is just how it's gonna be for, however long.
Yes. Do you have young kids in the house still?
I have two under two.
Oh yeah,
Yeah,
so very, very young. So
very young.
my kids, I'm about to be an empty nester, so it's been that. But I will say this, I have not recovered from the animated movie on repeat season of my life to want to go back and see any other animated movies. Like, people are like, do you want to watch this? And I'm like, I'm sure it's great. And also, no. Like, I could probably sing some of like The Little Mermaid, all of, like the all of them. It's fantastic, but it is definitely a season. It's definitely a season. All right, are you ready, Rose, for the final three questions?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, very good. When you think of a relaxing vacation, what type of location pops into your mind? Something tropical and beachy, something in the mountains, a cruise, or something else entirely?
Okay, I've never been on a cruise. I would definitely take anyone else to take me on a cruise. Definitely by water. That for me is
Okay.
the thing.
Most relaxing. All right, very good. Okay, so as an author, here's one, but do you read and listen to books yourself? And if so, do you want to share a recent book that you've read or listened to?
I try to when I have the time. It's
Two
not.
under two doesn't give you a lot of time for reading. I should rephrase this. What's the last book that you read 10 consecutive words in? I'm kidding.
The recent, I can't remember who the author is, but the recent book I was reading was Stop the Spiral.
Okay.
And that was a really good one. And
And that sounds like it's like an anxiety like tool book.
yeah, so I definitely have an overactive mind, but that's actually one of the things I love about my mind, but I just have to learn how to taper it down sometimes if I'm feeling overstimulated. So.
Yeah, and there's that you can't always clean. You need other tools. All
Right.
right. Very although cleaning is a good tool for that. All right. So I have a theory. I think the world can be divided into two groups of people. Don't worry, this is not political. Group A is people who are ready to join in with karaoke at any time. They have a song ready to go. And the other group is people who will never, ever get close to a karaoke event to be sure that they are not put on the spot. Which group are you?
Oh, I'm probably group B. Karaoke,
Okay.
the things that terrify me.
Right. So there's like two groups, right? It's like the person who's like, here's my song, I'm ready to go. Absolutely sign me up. And there's the other group that's like, I heard that, the museum is open. I'll see you later. All right. That's it, Rose Sprinkle. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest on The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.